Now, this here we are trying to refresh our memory and remember the different parts of the peripheral nervous system. I think many of you are probably familiar with the with this graph here. The peripheral nervous system consists of anterior horn cell, or talking primarily about the lower motor neuron here. It consists of anterior horn cells. And if you have anything that goes wrong with anterior horn cells, then we call it a motor neuron disease. That's kind of the umbrella that will include different types of diseases and conditions. And then the root. And if you have anything goes wrong with the root, then that we call that condition radiculopathy. And then these multiple roots and different levels, they get together and they form a tree of multiple connections of different roots. That tree of nerves, we call it plexus. And anything that's wrong with the plexus, we call it plexopathy. And then from the plexus, you get multiple different nerves that run from the plexus all the way to the muscles. And those what we call nerves. The nerves are connected to the muscle through a neuromuscular junction. And anything goes goes wrong there, we call it neuromuscular junction disorder. And that is different from the general term of neuromuscular disorder. Here we're talking about specifically the neuromuscular junction disorder. And then the muscle itself with all the muscle fibers. And anything goes wrong with the muscle, we call it myopathy. Just like if anything goes wrong with the nerve, we call it neuropathy. So those terms are very well defined, and each of them refers to a part of the peripheral nervous system. Now, also in the peripheral nervous system, we have the sensory nerves, you know, starting with the receptors in the skin and then going through the sensory nerves that are commonly combined within the same nerve, so median or ulnar or radial. They contain both motor fibers and sensory fibers, where the signals are going both way. So these signals in the sensory nerves are coming out from the periphery, going through the nerves, through the plexuses, through the roots, but instead of the anterior, they go through the posterior horns, and from there, they synapse with their, or they continue actually, or they may cross to the other side, and then they continue their tracts or corresponding tracts based on what sensation is that, all the way to the brain, to the thalamus primarily. This is the sensory relay station, and from there to the sensory cortex or other types of the cortex. Now, it's a very important concept to remind ourselves with before we start this lecture. Is the difference between central nervous system and peripheral nervous system. One of the best ways to differentiate between them is obviously the upper versus lower motor neuron signs. With the upper motor neuron, we have hyperreflexia and hypertonia, and with the spasticity. With the lower motor neuron or peripheral nervous system, we have hyporeflexia and hypotonia, flaccidity. In addition to that, with the central nervous system problems, meaning upper motor neuron disorders, we have Babinski sign and we have clonus, while with the peripheral nervous system, lower motor neuron conditions or disorders, we have atrophy and we have fasciculations. anytime we see one of these features, it simply suggests that we're dealing with the lower motor neuron. And that means a peripheral nervous system. And then from there, we just need to further localize within the peripheral nervous system. We do not have to have all the features. So if someone has neuropathy or myopathy or radiculopathy, they don't have to have decreased reflexes plus a decreased tone plus atrophy plus fasciculations. Any one of those is enough. The more the better, of course, and the more secure the diagnosis will be. the few things here that I've added to this slide that are of extreme importance to help us localize within the peripheral nervous system. Some of them are not absolutely reliable, but they are fairly reliable. For example, if we have a case of someone describing some symptoms in one extremity only and does not involve, you know, upper and lower extremities. It does not involve both sides, obviously. It's just one extreme, one arm on one leg. Obviously, naturally, you're going to be considering things like radiculopathy, plexopathy, and mononeuropathy, just one nerve deal. It logically speaking, it makes the possibility of myopathy, for example, polyneuropathy, it just becomes almost impossible. It's extremely rare for a myopathy. There are few, but it's extremely rare for a myopathy to affect just one extremity strictly and doesn't cause any other problems. If you have pain in the spine, for example, or more importantly, radiating pain down the arm or the leg, with some symptoms, whether they are sensory only or motor only or both, then that pain itself, obviously, is going to make you think more of radiculopathy. Anytime we have upper and lower motor neuron signs in the same patient in a non-localizing pattern, meaning in a pattern that cannot be explained by a spinal cord condition or something else, then that's obviously the indicator of a motor neuron disease. If someone has bilateral symptoms, really symmetric, and they are sensory symptoms, mostly distal, for example, in the feet, then that's how neuropathy starts. Versus if someone has only motor symptoms, no sensory symptoms whatsoever, then you certainly would exclude things like radiculopathy or neuropathy, even though there are pure motor neuropathy, but that is relatively uncommon. What's more common, actually, is or more likely, I would say, is that you're dealing with myopathy, neuromuscular junction disorder, and motor neuron disease, because those conditions, obviously, they will have motor symptoms only. And the other way around, if someone has some sensory symptoms in their complaint, then that by itself would exclude the possibility of motor neuron disease, like ALS, for example. Why would an ALS patient have any sensory symptoms as part of their ALS? It's purely motor neuron disease. Same for myopathy. Muscles do not cause any numbness or tingling. So now again, we're always talking about one etiology behind the symptoms. In the real life, you're going to have cases where, you know, people may have two different things going on at the same time, like some diabetic neuropathy that's developing, and on top of that, they're having some myopathy. So of course, you know, things may not be straightforward in real life, but generally speaking, most of the time, even in real life, and always in the exam, you're going to have you have to consider that this is only one disease or disorder that is causing all these symptoms.